Yes, this is Billy Zabka hanging out with the Drunk on Comics fellas. Sweep the leg.
In this week's episode, we have our normal format for a podcast, but due to time restraints, it went a little bit quicker. So we also added right at the end our discussion panel that we had while at Motor City Comic Con. Hopefully you stay around to the end and listen to a little bit about us and our thoughts on the internet and everything in general. Drunk on Comics, live from Motor City Comic Con. And just to let you guys know, the latest statistics show 3 out of 4 members of Drunk on Comics make up 75% of the guys who do this podcast.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's magic. It's numbers. That's
math, like, doesn't lie.
Yeah, and 3 out of 4 of us are actually here.
Yeah,
so yeah, it works. So, cool, guys. Well, first, we actually got to thank Motor City. This has been a fantastic weekend for us. So happy that we could be a part of, especially the 25th anniversary. It's been one of our favorite shows to do, favorite shows to attend. But let's get things kicked right off because we're going to be running a little shorter than normal this week due to speaker room times and, you know, the fact that we can't just ramble on about.
Plus, we're going to put up a ton of interviews, so make sure you check those out.
No, but getting back to the shortness of time, I mean, maybe if that Dirk Manning could have could have gone a little quicker. But
yeah, no, we love Dirk, and he's been one of our favorites, you know, since we started. So, all right, who wants to get things kicked off the shelf this week?
All right, I will, because it's a book about cons. However, when I picked this up at my local comic shop, I did not realize that it was something that not only came out a while ago, but it was something that you could find free online. However, I'd never seen some of these mini cartoons within this, so it's Image Year One, Tales from the Con. This pretty much was a book of small images that are all puns almost, which is something that I enjoy. Ultimately, it's something that was just different. The art was great, and just the writing was phenomenal. It was written by Brad Geiger and illustrated by Chris Giriosu. But it's something that there's not much to talk about as far as a story, because it's just Tales from the Con. It has some interesting tips, which we probably need to start following as well. But ultimately, it's a comic book that when we read comic books, we can read superhero stuff, we can read horror stuff, we can read this and that, but sometimes you just want to have a laugh, and the comic parts come out. So, Tales from the Con is the book that I picked up this week.
All right, little warning for you guys, too, both here and at home. There's going to be spoilers, because we will talk about things that happen in the book, so, you know, if you hear something, plug your ears. If you're here and at home, just hit pause and come back a little bit later. I'm talking about The Walking Dead, number 127, this week. And, as always, written by Robert Kirkman, Charlie Adler as pencils, Stefano Gaudiano as inker, and Cliff Rathburn on gray tones, Russ Wooten on letters. This, for those people that have been reading it, just wrapped up the all-out war. And for as much as I love this, I was actually at the point where I think I was, you know, I was ready to go back and read it in trades versus actually, you know, reading single issues. The first thing I got to say, it's $2.99 issue and it's a double issue. So rather than throw more pages in and jack up the price, they just said, here you go, $3, twice as much fun.
That's a steal.
That is. And here's the thing, because I was kind of at the point where I'm like, what's Kirkman going to do with this? How is he going to continue on? Because it seems like it's just the same group of people. Oh, there's a new enemy. How do we get around it? Move on, new enemy, get around it. Move on, new enemy, get around it. And so it's like, okay, now we're going to have a whole bunch of exposition now that they finish this out. You know, they got Negan. He's in jail. And so it's going to be a lot of this talking bull crap that is just going to go nowhere for a while. They jumped ahead 2 years from the last issue.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice little
time travel.
Yeah.
Did not see that coming.
Yeah, I know. It's not even a Marvel book.
Yeah.
But what they did, they jumped ahead. There's a new group of people that are coming in. Basically, the group of Rick and all the other groups around Hilltop and the Kingdom and all that have really come a long way in 2 years on more or less rebuilding civilization. You know, the other.
So, but if we know that in 2 years' time they're all going to be alive, does that take away from the chance that they might be eaten by zombies?
No, there's no jump back. This is they're jumping 2 years forward and moving on.
Oh, I thought they'd do a bunch of flashbacks in between.
No, this is which
I can live
with that. The one really cool thing. I mean, the girl who's on the front cover here, it's kind of nice because you're walking with her in this journey, as to seeing what's going on now in this, you know, in all these new towns, and she's your perspective. And it was a really, really nice thing that Kirkman did, you know, on here, just so that you had a little bit better understanding. He gave you a tour guide, more or less, to walk you through. So she's trying to find things out at the same time you are. It works impeccably well in here. Charlie Adlard, as always, you know, I mean, the panel right before this, Dirk Manning was talking about how Tony Moore did the first 6 issues and Charlie's done the 121 after. And how that after 6 issues, it's like, oh, but this isn't quite the same. I can't imagine anybody else drawing The Walking Dead now at this point. So
my question is, 2 years in the future, does fucking Carl know to stay in the house now?
No, he doesn't. I will leave that little bit of the spoiler.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no. Although Carl's gotten a little emo looking in here, and I'm like, eh. I'm like, okay, but that's actually one of the other nice things, too, is because you've been seeing these characters drawn the exact same way for so long. It's been 2 years. They have a slightly new look. You know, Rick's got the hair, but he's got a buzz cut, you know. And Carl, it's not totally his fault that he's going emo, that he has the little hangover because he's trying to hide that gaping fucking hole that he's got for an eye. But it's a great book, and honestly, I think if people haven't been reading The Walking Dead and they're a little worried about the fact that there's what, 20 trades out there now probably at this point, this is actually a good place where you can jump on and you're going to be kind of walked through and you're going to learn who these characters are. So it's one of the main reasons I wanted to bring it up, because The Walking Dead's hard to jump into. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the first good jumping on point, like really good jumping on point that they've had since it started, honestly.
It's only 127 issues later.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You know, so maybe around maybe 250, he'll have another jumping on point. So hop on now.
All right. I'm going to cover Iron Man number 25.
You know, people at home can't see that. Right?
No, but our people here can see the cover. Written by Kieran Gillen, art by Luke Ross, and colors by Guru FX. This is part of a story arc still involving the Rings of the Mandarin, who have been trying to kill Tony Stark by finding new hosts. Well, Malekith the Accursed, the Dark Elf ruler of Sveltenheim. Notice how I got that name right, but we always get names of artists and stuff wrong. But I can say my Norse realms pretty well.
Why do you say we?
Moving on. Malekith the Accursed has stolen a few of these Mandarin rings, and Tony Stark's mad about it. So being the hero type, he goes in and fights. In this issue, it starts off with Iron Man essentially wearing a full suit made out of iron, which is according to mythology. Yeah, but according to mythology, iron is the like bane of the Dark Elves. It kills them more or less instantly, the same way that silver kills vampires into blade. It just disintegrates them. So Iron Man now has Malekith afraid, and he's running away. And what I particularly liked about this issue is that the Dark Elves are all sadists. They torture people. They do terrible, awful things. Malekith was really good at pushing Tony Stark's buttons by saying he was a changeling child and talking about his parents and that whole story arc. But then once the tide turns on him, Malekith turns into a whiny little bitch and just starts running away from him. He's like, oh, no, don't hurt me. Okay, you're too powerful. Please don't kill me. And he starts teleporting away. And it's great to see this really, truly awful villain who is so often like heartless and ruthless to his own lieutenants and stuff. He'll casually kill the people who fail him. Be so like has got self-preservation issues that he'll whine and beg. And it's really great because it can make me hate him more now. And for villains, that's a good thing. So it's a good book. It's a really nice story arc. And it's the story arc is called Rings of the Mandarin. And you guys can't see it at home, but maybe you guys can see. It's got a nice little tribute to Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings and the lettering of the title page. And they've also made a couple Lord of the Rings references in the story arc. So Gillen being, you know, pretty aware of
pop culture
and stuff is inserted some of that in there. So good story arc. Pick it up.
Awesome. Tony, what's next?
We got some news for you. Some news from mostly this week.
Mostly?
Yes, mostly this week. The first one that I want to just talk about, because we talk about in our panel about spoilers and everything and this and that. However, I mean, teasers are okay, but they're kind of getting a bit ridiculous of how many teasers they have for almost every book and the amount of teasers they have for the same book. Now we're going to start jumping in. Marvel has come out with the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, or teaser for their trailer. So they have a new trailer for their movie, and they just made a teaser for that trailer. And my mind is just exploding of, really? So, but I guess if you guys want to check that out, go ahead and get teased a bit.
So will there eventually be, like, now, what is it, a video teaser, or what is it?
No, it's just a teaser of them that there's going to be one.
Okay. Well, then you realize, though, because there's probably going to be one more trailer, they're going to go back to the Marvel one word, the comic book teasers that they put out. It's just going to be one word, and that will be the teaser for the teaser for the trailer for the movie.
It'll just say the. You'll have to guess what that means.
That can mean anything.
Yeah. Zack Snyder released a photo that he took of Ben Affleck wearing the new bat suit and the Batmobile here earlier this week. And I got to admit, now you guys know I do dog on Affleck quite a bit because he ruined Daredevil for me, you know, but I can't entirely blame him, but you know, he's the scapegoat.
I'm still mad at him for the end of Chasing Amy. So I still haven't gotten over that.
The cool thing, if you guys haven't seen it, is that the photo actually has the short-eared bat suit, and to me, it's very, very reminiscent of the Frank Miller Dark Knight Batman. Mm-hmm. And
well, even the Batmobile looks halfway
plausible.
No, not only plausible, but it looks when they had a teaser trailer of just the back, it looked like old school Batmobile. But now looking at this one with the wheels and everything, it looks like it's almost part tumbler too. Like took the best of that iconic, not a giant tank Batmobile, but kind of upgraded, you know, an old school one to be more retrofitted.
Yeah. The other one thing that I really do like about the costume design is it's actually got the big wide bat symbol on the chest.
And no bat nipples?
No bat nipples, although it does look like it's got bat veins. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how that comes up.
It actually looks like there's cloth over the armor pieces, which is kind of nice, because a lot of times in the comics you see him drawn, you're like, it looks like you're wearing some kind of material over your armor that gets ripped and scratched, and so now you have that opportunity of having that.
It's shiny.
Yeah. You can get some battle damage in there. In other news, Channing Tatum has been confirmed to play Gambit in the X-Men sequels. For many people, Channing Tatum is, you know, really attractive piece of meat to look at. To other people, Channing Tatum has about as much acting potential as Keanu Reeves. So I've always found him a bit wooden, but I'm not going to dog him too much. He is from New Orleans, so that does give some credit for him being the raging Cajun. However, he himself has admitted that his Cajun accent is not that good.
Really?
But he's got the New Orleans accent, which is different as far as dialects go to the Cajun. And since that usually tends to be the part that annoys people the most about seeing a live-action Gambit portrayed, or any voice actors for Gambits, it'll be interesting to see if he can pull it off.
Well, he's an actor. He can go get acting lessons, right?
Major Hollywood actors learning to act. You're so silly.
Yeah, something that I am superiorly super happy about is Superior Spider-Man's coming back with two more issues. And this will be Spider-Ock's story. It's going to be kicking off the whole Spider-Verse that will be happening this fall. But I know that it was polarizing for a lot of people, and people are still bitching at Dan Slott for he ruined Spider-Man with his whole story.
And people said that he ruined their childhood.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I want to tell them, no, pick up the book, because it was a really engaging, interesting story. So If any listeners out here have not picked up The Superior Spider-Man,
don't judge it before you've read it. Because yeah. I was totally on board, skeptical about it at first, too. But I think they did a great job at pulling it off.
And spoiler alert, Peter Parker came back from the dead, so he is back.
Yeah, yeah, for people that are listening for the first time, Tony and I had a very long-running bet as to whether or not Peter Parker was dead and was going to return from the dead, or whether or not he was still just trapped inside the mind. And Tony lost that bet. My biggest complaint about this, couple more issues, is that I might have to fucking pony up that money back if for some reason they release some information in there.
Yeah, so I'm hoping on that. My bank is banking on
so,
that.
But one of the reasons why the Superior Spider-Man could come back is this is a story that will take place in 2099. When the 2099 Spider-Man came back to the present time, Marvel and their time traveling, there was a brief moment where Superior Spider-Man vanished outside in mid-sentence, and it was a little bit disjarring, and you think, oh, well, that makes sense because there's super science going on. But apparently he went to the future for a time being, and that's what these two issues are going to cover. So,
speaking of Marvel, Jake Wyatt, just a quick note, is actually going to be a fill-in guest artist on Ms. Marvel, and he's going to be writing the beautiful words of Willow Wilson on Ms. Marvel for issues 6 and 7. So I'm kind of excited to see what he's going to be doing on that. So,
cool.
Speaking of other really awesome comics, The Woods, which we talked about here a couple weeks back.
Yeah, we were able to get our hands on a copy before it was even out.
Yeah.
That was just awesome. When you go to conventions, some of the exclusives you can get. Amazing.
Yeah, The Woods from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV and Michael Diolinis. This book was fantastic, and in fact, it did so well that the first print has already sold out, and they've already got the second one coming. So if you guys miss this book, make sure that you go down to your shop, tell them to pick it up.
Some sad news, I mean, especially for me, because it's probably, I just enjoy the art. H.R. Giger passed away this past week, and he was the person that pretty much designed the xenomorphs of aliens and all that. And his vision of sexual, biomechanical, alienness stuff is, I don't even know how to describe it, because you could look at any of his things and be like, what is that? The penis, maybe, but...
It's the penis mightier. Yeah. It's the...
reading a bit about Giger... he was a Swiss surrealist, and he kind of understood that his art wasn't going to be classified as high art. It was going to be much more pop culture art. And he kind of embraced that. He knew that it wasn't going to hang in pristine galleries and stuff, but he has the Giger Museum, and a lot of themed-based like bars or clubs would hire him to do some of these installations because regardless of how you feel about his art, they're creepy. It creates a nice atmosphere of creepiness.
He also has the counter, right? The Giger counter?
Oh.
Is that, no?
Wrong guy.
Actually, speaking of Giger, though, if anybody out there hasn't had a chance, I don't even know exactly where to find it, but I saw a book years ago that actually showed like his dining room, and mm-hmm. everything in it was based off of his design, and so it's basically you're sitting at the dining room table, more or less sitting in the lap of the xenomorphs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, it's terrifying. I'm like, the fuck do you sit there and eat? But it's cool.
You have to eat like this, and then something, your tongue's got to come out and grab the food.
And is everything coated in honey? Because that's actually what they used for the drool.
The drool is honey?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be tasty.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe they're not so bad after all.
Well, speaking of ugly faces, leads us into selfies. And
oh, yeah, I forgot we talked about or found this news article.
Well, yeah, this just came out this morning. This August, I believe it is, DC is doing a whole line of new variant covers that are...
Imagine DC doing variant covers.
I know, what? Actually, imagine anybody doing variant.
That's true. They are pretty popular.
The whole damn set is going to be... And they've got, oh God, I don't know, probably 20-ish of their books here listed. They're going to be selfies where the characters, from what we understand, are going to be taking self-portraits of themselves. So
I just can't imagine Batman doing a selfie. He'll be like, look at me in my Batcave.
I've got a duck face. So, I don't know. Like, I mean, is this the point where the variant covers are jumping the shark?
No, because I think that it'll be... I think they can have a lot of fun with them. And so hopefully we get some real good, humorous covers. I can't imagine them taking it too seriously.
Well, and hopefully there's some just really amazing artists on this that go to town on it and make it worthwhile.
Can you imagine if they get, like, Alex Ross to have to paint, paint a selfie of somebody?
Get Clayton Crane with his just insane painted dark style. Yeah. Tony, what else did you have out there today?
Well, I know Dark Horse wants to give you $1,000.
Okay.
Not you, but like the listeners.
How do you know it might not be me?
Because you aren't lucky at anything.
What? the casino paid for my trip to C2E2 pretty much, so.
That is true. All right, never mind. They are giving it to you.
Basically... what you need to do is you need to buy Biatomic Legion, the new book coming out from Dark Horse, and then send an email to atomiclegion@darkhorse.com with your list of all of the basically pop culture and sci-fi references, some of them maybe Easter eggs in there, and a picture of yourself with the book by the end of the month. It has to be in by May 31st. The first person to correctly identify the most references will be awarded $1,000 cash, and they're also going to be throwing in $1,000 worth of Dark Horse comics to the winner's favorite comic shop. So, you know, if you're smart, if you're clever, go pick it up and send it in.
If we were smart and clever, we wouldn't have just told our thousands of listeners to do this. 'Cause now we got competition.
If they were smart and clever, they would all band together and work on it as a team project.
But yeah.
And give us a kickback because we told them about it.
We can all have, like, you know, 3 cents each by the time they all band together. Yeah. So that is pretty much it. Other than one quick thing I just wanted to mention, there's a new trailer out for Constantine on NBC. My only real concern, and this is going to have to wait to be seen, is that they also said that they're going to be airing the show on Fridays at 10. So I'm wondering if they're setting it up for failure or if they think that's when people are going to be watching it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, they're making it at a 10 o'clock time. Well, yeah, it could be that they just don't care about the property then. But I'm hoping that because it's going to be so late, it will be a little
10 grittier. O'clock time slot, I'm totally good with it. It's Friday.
But, yeah, your demographic, which I would imagine would be, you know, young adults, are usually out at the bar or out on a date or maybe out in front of the TV at the movies or something. So,
I mean, 10 o'clock time slot is just not good. So, anyway, I mean, and I know for us, 10 o'clock on a Friday, we're drinking. So, all right, that wraps it up for me on news. Tony, did you have anything else?
I didn't really find anything else.
Okay.
Thanks for asking me, guys.
Well, I know you don't have anything else. All right, should we move on to Indy Turnpike?
Yes, this is the best Indy Turnpike we have ever done.
This is
the biggest one we've ever done.
It is the largest, biggest Indy Turnpike that we've ever done. We have this week something that we found here at Motor City, and it's Cosmic Scoundrels and Liberty Justice, written by Tyler Shainline and drawn by Andy Seriano. And this is actually self-published, this size. And it's 11 by 17, so the artwork is actually full-size artwork, because for those of you that don't know, most artists draw their pages on an 11 by 17 size sheet, and then it's, you know, shrunk down.
There's actually two stories in here, and Tyler Shanlin wrote the Liberty Justice story, but Matt Chapman wrote the Cosmic Scoundrels.
Yes, yes. Now, Tyler and Andy are here, so you guys can pick this up. It's $15, and we did a great interview with them, so if you want to hear a little bit more on where to get it too, you can do that. Now, Liberty Justice has had a couple pages appearing on the back pages of Burn the Orphanage and a few other books from Image right now, so you can get a little bit of a teaser there. And this book, I actually coined a term for them, and was it Kevin and I that were talking to him? Okay, yeah. Coined a term for them. This is a spaceploitation book.
Yeah.
And it's definitely that Foxy Brown type character who is Liberty Justice, and the Cosmic Scoundrels are very much those Han Solo almost type characters, you know, doing the bad things and having fun while they're doing it.
But they're like brothers too, who are going to bicker with each other. So.
Oh, absolutely. Now the artwork in here by Andy Soriano, for those of you who aren't familiar with him, he is very well known for doing Samurai Jack, both the television show as well as the comic. And he's got a very, very loose style on his artwork. But he also did the colors and the inks on here as well.
The colors are just so bright and pretty and...
Oh, they pop. I mean, the colors are really what pulled the images right off the page.
Yeah, Liberty Justice's hair is like this rainbow, like...
Psychedelic,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fro, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, now, this is a book for mature readers.
Definitely.
You know, just as a warning there. But it's fun, it's lighthearted, there's some great jokes in here. Go check these guys out.
And it's huge. It won't even fit in your long box.
No, that's the one thing I told them. I'm like, how the hell am I going to bag and board this? Because I'm a little anal retentive when it comes to my books. So, yeah, check out Cosmic Scoundrels and Liberty Justice. You guys will definitely appreciate this.
Well, besides that book, is there anything else that you picked up this at this convention? I mean,
Holy crap.
A lot of stuff that happened this weekend.
Yeah.
And we're still not even done.
Yeah, I've picked up a ton. I mean, I've picked up a ton of trade paperbacks from people that I wanted to. I've got some original art from Cena Grace. I got an original animation cell from Bob Camp from Ren and Stimpy, with Stimpy as... Ask Dr. Stupid. And yeah, I mean, and I'm forgetting stuff. I've bought so much already.
I would say, though, not even just with buying stuff, the able to talk to some of these people. I mean,
that's hands down the best part.
I mean,
yeah.
And just being able to go up to any artist and just saying, I love your work, and them just being like, thank you. And really, if you... Oh, they are so approachable here.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I love this show as much as I do, because with this show, it's the biggest show you can have that still has a small show atmosphere to it, where you can walk up to pretty much anybody that, you know, they aren't going to be necessarily just pushing you through like you know, production line.
Yeah.
And so that's why I've always loved this place.
I met Carl Urban in the elevator.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's just been fun just getting to chat and hang out with, you know, people like Billy Zabka and Martin Cove, talking to them for a while in the bar one evening, you know, and just, you know, talking to all of our creator friends, which you guys will hear lots and lots of interviews coming up for that. But
anyone in the audience have any really cool stories? What was that in the back? Meeting us? Yes, you are awesome.
All right. What else we got here, Tony?
Oh, let's get to Booze in a Book.
Booze in a Book. Okay. Booze in a Book this week is...
Brought to you by...
Oh, Ink Booze and... Oh, thank you. Yeah. And, wow. Yeah. They're so new, I almost forgot.
Yeah, brought to you by Ink Whiskey, the creators of an amazing Nintendo cartridge flask.
Yeah.
Retro flask. We've been having it at our booth, and so many people have been interested in them. You guys can check them out at inkwhiskey.com. And pick those up for yourself.
$20, free shipping. Dude, and that's a steal. But yeah, for people here, you want to see them in person, swing by our booth. We'll show them to you. Otherwise, you can always go onto our website and check it out there. But yeah, so Ink Whiskey, Booze in a Book. Afterlife with Archie number 5. I picked up the Andrew P. Poy variant because, you know, me and variants, you know, I may complain that there's a lot of them out there, but when they only
you
do...
keep buying them.
If the art's good, well, and Andrew does the classic Archie style, which looks nothing like the book on the inside. Now, this book is written by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, and the artwork is Francesco Francavilla on here. I am pairing this with a Delirium Nocturnum, which is, and I have no idea how to pronounce the brewery, but it's H-U-Y-G-H-E. It's a Belgian brewery. Heige, maybe? I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll go with it. Yeah. Delirium is how I have always known it by, so.
Yeah. This is a Belgian strong dark ale with an 8.5% alcohol by volume, and it's not cheap. I saw a 4-pack for $25.
Yep.
You know, so it's pricey. You can also get the, it's about a 25-ounce bottle for about $13-14.
Like buying a bottle of wine, almost.
So. Yeah, yeah. And I'm pairing these two together because... Yes, while it's a very high end, you know, very high end beer, and yes, it is dark. It's going to be, I think, a little bit off putting to some people, and I think afterlife with Archie because of the fact that it's not the normal thing. They open it up, they see the artwork by Frank Avia is going to be a little bit scary to people, and they might not want to try it. Both this beer and this book are insanely accessible by everyone, and once you've tried them both, you're going to be hooked, and all you're going to want is more. So that's booze in a book for me.
All right, you got any last calls?
I got a few. You want to kick it off, or you want me to?
Oh, I got a big stack this week, too. Krampus number 5. If you guys have not picked up this book, it is, I don't know how you'd say it, mythical wonderland of...
Holidays.
Yes.
Santa's.
Yeah.
Well, not just Santa's, like the other...
Oh, yeah.
The other creatures within holiday-ness lore and everything, but... Krampus number 5, pretty great, and I love where this series is going.
You know, I stopped, I think, after issue 2 only because of the volume of books that I was reading at that time, and I just couldn't continue.
This is an original story that is, I mean, it's made by Image, but this is just so, for me, independent books are just the stuff that's not normal. There's nothing normal about.
Well, and Brian Joynes, who wrote that, also did Imagine Agents, which was a fantastic story. And, you know, I wanted to keep reading. I probably should have just kept buying them and, you know, just stacked them off to the side for a while. But that stack is growing immensely.
Hey, are we reviewing these books or are we last calling them?
Oh, well, whatever. You know? Justice League United or the Justice League Canada, whichever variant cover you got. Yeah, this is this one in particular is for our buddy Jay over at An Elegant Weapon Podcast, you know. Written by Jeff Lemire, who is a Canadian as well. But this is, you know, I'm not a DC guy, but I love Lemire's writing. It's worth picking up. At least give it a shot.
Fantastic Four, number 4. So it's the 4 of the 4. Another good book that I love in the series that I enjoy.
All New Ghost Rider, number 3. Tony, I know that you weren't on board with the idea at the beginning, but I'm telling you, you need to borrow these and read them. This is the best Ghost Rider that I've ever seen out there. So, Nightcrawler number 2 by Chris Claremont, who is also here. Anybody get to go talk to Claremont at all? Sorry, no. Do it if you've got a book to have him sign. If you can get him to start talking, the dude will talk your ear off. He's fantastic. Royals Masters of War. This is number 4 of 6 from Vertigo. This is still an insanely cool book. Robin Hood Legend number 3, also well worth picking up. And then Tony, you had one more, I believe, on there, one or two more.
Astro City number 12, another great independent book. And God, I always wanted to still call it Collider, but Federal Bureau of Physics, FPB, still going gravity strong.
And then did you say All New X-Men in there too?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
No,
I was saving that one for you.
Oh, that one was the one that I could talk about?
Yeah. We read a lot of the same books sometimes, so...
I didn't get to my comic book shop this week. I had to come here.
So. Didn't start till Friday.
Shh.
You got here early. So, that pretty much wraps it up, you know, for everything that I've got this week. I know it's a little shorter than normal, but we're a little shorter on time.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty much going to do it. Thanks again to Motor City.
Yep.
So, all right.
Thank
Cheers,
you,
guys.
And thanks to our audience for coming and listening to us record our podcast.
So. All right.
Ah, see, that's proof that people were here.
It's like a fake clapping I've done before.
So keep reading your comics, guys. We'll be back. Talk to you about them next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Drunk on Comics Live Panel, Motor City Comic Con 2014. Got any podcast fans in the house here? All right, then.
None.
And we're going to teach you how to be podcast fans. This is a local podcast out of Michigan. I present to you Tony.
Hello.
Derek. Kev.
Salut.
And Matt.
Hi.
My name is Jay. I'm your host for this panel. I'm from Toronto. I'm the co-curator of the Points of Interest Podcast Network, and I host a show called An Elegant Weapon. I've had the pleasure of knowing these guys for a while, doing a little cross-pod here and there. And, yeah, so we're going to talk to you today. These guys are going to let you know what it's like to, what a podcast is, what it's like to do one, and all that good stuff. So basically, I'm going to throw it to Derek first, and Derek's going to tell you how these guys got started.
Well, I'll at least kick it off a little bit. For us, I mean, we've all been nerds forever, and so, you know, this was a simple transition in that. it really started when I moved from Grand Rapids down to Kalamazoo and started listening to a lot of podcasts, and all of a sudden realized that a lot of the conversations that were happening on podcasts were very similar in a sense to what Tony and I would end up doing at the bar when all of a sudden the conversation switched to comics. And it's kind of a, hey, why don't we record this?
You can only talk about religion and politics for so long before you need a refreshing course of comic books. So
yeah, so we kind of started throwing around the idea, and Tony can kind of fill in on how the name and all that began.
Yes, and so since we always talked about it at the bar, thought we had to have some sort of theme, something to set us apart from all the other podcasts. So, well, somehow we got to put booze in this, and for the longest time, I just kept on thinking Comics Hangover. It just sounds so cool. We get so, you know, drunk on reading comics, and then that kind of just came into, but we get drunk on reading comics, and we get drunk, and we are drunk on comics. So it really evolved from just shooting back and forth a bunch of different names that just didn't seem to stick, or the ones that did were already taken. So right that night, we went on our smartphones and grabbed the Twitter handle and Gmail thing and got started from there and started building our website. And
yeah, made sure the domain wasn't taken and all that, because we wanted to be able to have the website simultaneous with our podcast. We thought it was going to be an easier route, you know, not only for promotion, but also for us to be able to host our own podcast on our website. So that's kind of more or less, you know, how we got started
on
there.
Our origin story.
Yeah.
Now, as far as when you guys get started, the actual technology and stuff, how difficult was that for you guys to learn, you know, get to know that aspect of it? Because that's everybody's, you know, to start a podcast, where do you do? Where do you start?
I can say if we can figure it out, then all of you can probably figure it out, especially the youth in here, because you guys are way better at technology than we are. But
it was challenging. Everything from getting a website set up to how to get your podcast on there to how to actually get it to upload to iTunes and all of the other things that went into it.
Well, heck, even the equipment. We didn't really know what equipment we should have. What did we use to record that first episode?
This?
No, that wasn't the first episode. I think it was straight up through...
No, first episode. We went and bought this
we
one.
Just, did we? Casually, yeah. Leaned into our laptop.
Well, yeah, because, well, see, and if anybody's interested in starting, we used a Blue Snowball mic, and the nice thing with the Snowball is they're relatively inexpensive. I want to say that I paid maybe $60 for it. And it really does do a nice job of picking up, you know, kind of an overall ambient room sound. In here, if you go back and listen to this when we post it, you'll find out it's actually a little echoey, probably, because of the dynamics of the room. That's where we started. Then we moved on to actual real microphones. And Kevin got those, and you know more about that.
Yeah. So that Snowball microphone, it's called an omnidirectional.
Yes.
Microphones, because we just put it in the center of the table. We'd all sit around that, and then we went to static mics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So we each have our own dedicated microphone, nice mixer board, and it works. Works real nice with Audacity.
Yeah.
Which is a free program which will allow you to record audio or mix together whatever audio projects you're playing with.
Yeah.
Then it's a free program anyone can download.
It is the hands down the best open source software out there.
And then for the on site things where we're doing interviews and whatnot, we switched to the Zoom H4 handheld, which is a fantastic piece of equipment. It's a little pricey. But you could actually just do your podcast off of that if you just wanted to do just one thing. And then it downloads to the SD card. It's already set as an MP3. And boom, you're off and running.
And one of the big things with podcasting is you can do that about anything. Just like writing in a journal. Recording your own voices with your friends and conversations is just the same thing that we do, except for we have a medium where we can upload it. And anyone can just do that. And that's really changed the face of the industry and internet in general has just come about, where anyone that's an amateur can really start turning into be a professional. We are definitely amateurs, but we are professionals. We kind of go between the mix depending on how many beers we have.
Well, and I think that kind of like leans into the whole thing of what we really wanted to talk about too, is just how the internet has changed the comic book industry and community itself, because if you look 15 years ago when we were coming to this show, yeah, you might have a little bit out there on the internet. There's a website you go and see maybe who was there, but you didn't have the chatter going on with everybody within talking, oh, I'm excited about this person. Everybody's going, hey, are you going here? Are you going there? Word of mouth through the internet is probably the most, you know, valuable source for anybody that's doing what we do or anybody that's in the comic industry in general. So, I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Because when you invited me to join the show, I was still kind of stuck in the pre-internet area. Like, how are people going to find out about us? We're going to have our own fanzine we're going to be handing out.
Yeah, it's that Twitter and, well, primarily Twitter for us is where it really took off. Just getting the word out, talking to people. And, you know, then just, yeah, we did flyers and shops, but I mean, realistically, if it wasn't for, you know, social networking, nobody would be hearing us. We would not be sitting here right now.
Well, not only that, but the time and effort that it takes on the individual's part to actually promote your own show, to get the word out there of who you are. Going to conventions for fun, visiting things, but then handing out business cards, say, hey, this is who we are, interested in an interview, like to talk to you later if you get a chance. All those things in corporate, kind of some things that you'd probably want to do at a convention anyways, but now you're kind of leaning towards that more professional side from the amateur side of, and now I got to record it and make it legit, and hopefully other people will listen to it and enjoy it as well.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that also goes down to it. If we're doing it because we have fun. We like what we do, you know. But yeah, there is a lot of time commitment that goes into it. I mean, we all have the regular Monday through Friday job, and then this is the second job.
Well, you know? Yeah, well, first of all, just reading the comics in general, I mean, like, we all have small to large stacks. And if you haven't listened to our show before, we start the show by talking about what we feel individually is the best comic that came out that week or something that strike personally a chord with you. So, of course, instead of just grabbing one, you got to go through several. So,
I was talking last night with somebody, and I don't remember who it was. That's probably one of the biggest things on time constraint for it is that, you know, you get your books on Wednesday. By the time you get out of work and get home and read them, you basically have Wednesday and Thursday night to read everything and maybe a little bit of Friday. But then it's at that point, then it's actually starting into the pre-show prep. And so if you're picking up, you know, 20-ish books a week, your Wednesday and Thursday nights are not very social.
Yeah, 20. Man, I was just exaggerating with my hand gestures about I think I'm sick of it. Jeez.
So one of the things that the internet has done besides giving amateurs a way to be professionals is really spreading the news of the industry in general. And it doesn't even matter if it's just comic books. It could be Star Wars fan sites. It could be Star Trek fan sites, not to start a war between those two franchises.
Or a Trek.
Yes. Does anyone here, I'm sure you guys go on the internet. Are there any news sites that you guys use religiously every day to find out information?
Yeah, where do you... Okay, let's start. Who uses Facebook every day? About half. Who uses Twitter every day? About maybe a third? Instagram? What else are we missing out there? Tumblr? Yeah.
Damn.
Is there anybody out here that doesn't use social media? Cool. Yeah, because otherwise I don't know how the hell you would have found us. Yeah, it really is a great thing. And I mean, you start talking to people, and I think that's one of the biggest things. When you look at at the actual comic book community itself, how well it's grown, people now actually can feel a little bit more engaged with people. It doesn't matter if they're in the UK, or if they're here, or if they're, you know, in Canada, like Jay or whatever. You know, they can be, you know, thousands of miles apart, and all of a sudden you have something that you both like and you start talking about it. I think it's one of the nicest things about it. And that's also kind of one of the reasons why we do what we do, is because we like to promote the comic book industry as a whole. And, you know, we talk about, like Kevin said, we talk about what we like, and it's an easy way for us to get our voice out there, and then we can start talking to other people. They engage Twitter, Facebook, whatever it may be, and you start finding out about more. Hey, did you read this one? Hey, did you read that? And I think that's...
Well, not only that has changed, it's about the creators too. They're more engaged with their fans as well. Where before, you used to have to go to a convention in order to say hi, do your favorite artist, or this and that. Now you can kind of just go on Twitter, on Facebook, hey, man, totally love what you did on that. And they may reply, and then you're all like, yeah, he replied to me. He liked me. Yeah. Like we do sometimes.
All the time.
Yeah.
Or when you make a bad comment about someone's book you haven't read, and he posts about how maybe you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, and then you apologize, and then everything's cool.
Yeah.
Which is a true story that happened early in our podcasting. As Derek said, we try to stay positive, and we still keep that. It doesn't mean that we won't tear into some books, particularly when they're from the bigger two. And now Image is kind of bigger too, so they're
not really
quite three. But so we try to stay positive with the voice, and then occasionally, you know, we say some fun things, or when we try to be critical, we try to always have a purpose for that criticism. Okay. But early on, we learned our lesson that, you know what, sometimes the creators are listening, and
well, especially when you post the podcast and you tag them, hey, we talked about your book.
Yeah. So. So you do, if you are thinking of starting a podcast or something, you do want to think about, you know, the message that you're sending. Too oftentimes I hear people being critical, and it's just about tearing things down. And so we try to be much more positive about building things up. We'll only talk about the things we like, and sometimes we don't even have enough time to talk about all the things that we like. But if you stay positive when you meet those people then at conventions and stuff, they're like, I've heard of you guys, you're cool, yeah, I'll give you 5 extra minutes to do an interview and stuff. So it's a good way to build a reputation of somebody worth working with, is just to remain positive about it.
Matt, you hit on a good point, though. We don't have enough time to even talk about all the stuff that we like. Mm-mm. I mean, that's why, you know, the last segment of our podcast is called Last Call, where we just rip through the list of other books that we read that were worth reading that we didn't even have time to talk about. And I think if you waste time on the negative, you're, number one, you're giving press to something that really shouldn't get it. And number two, you're taking away time from the books that do deserve it. So, I mean, there's so much great stuff in the comics, in the comic industry right now. Why waste your time? So,
Harkening back to the social media aspect you guys were talking about, as Tony, you said, you can podcast about anything. And if you ever go into iTunes or whatever and scan through, there's absolutely people talking about everything. You guys being comic-centric, how do you feel things like Kickstarter and the social media has affected the comic industry itself?
Kickstarter's fantastic, but I'll let you guys jump on this one first if you want.
I think that, particularly for Kickstarter, allows the fans' voice to be heard. So if you like something and you can support it on Kickstarter, that's saying, yes, I want you to make this. And therefore, it more often gets done. Especially if you have a creative team, a writer or an artist that you really like their work, you should look into some of their projects that they do. If they can't get one of the publishers to put that book out, they'll try to do it independently. And oftentimes, the hardest problem is coming up with starting capital, particularly since artists and writers aren't always paid the millions of dollars that their books make. So they really do need that fan support, and I think it's been a great positive experience. One of my favorites, online comics called Order of the Stick, he was only looking for, like, I want to say it was like $50,000 or something so he could republish some of the back issues. And he made over $1 million because the fans were so inspired by his work. They love his work. They want him to keep doing it. And so he's like, this is awesome. I can now do this full time and get you guys some more content. So,
well, not even with showing the support. It kind of is another venue for creative people. If you're not wanting to record yourself and make podcasts, but you want to draw and make your own art, this is your venue then to try to somehow get it out there. Even if you don't reach that goal, because sometimes people don't have all those backers, you're at least starting to get looked at by a couple people. Some people might say, holy crap, I really like, you know, that style. Find out that you didn't get that book published, but then they'll follow you and they'll try to find out the next time you're doing something. And it really comes down to is putting yourself out there in the open, and you'll be vulnerable for a minute, but once you start seeing that people are reaching to you and being positive to you, it's a wonderful feeling.
Well, I think with the Kickstarter, the nice thing too, though, is that especially if you have a project that you're passionate about, and, you know, we've talked to a couple different creators and how if you've got a writer and artist that have the same vision, they don't necessarily need to go through a process where there's going to be an editor involved and there's going to be someone else involved, and they want to make it and they know that people are going to like it, or they know enough people will like it that they just want to make it for themselves, Kickstarter is a great way. But I think Kickstarter is a good voice for people too, like you were saying, Matt, where if people support it, they can go out and go, yeah, look, hey, here's where it is. So it's, I think in the industry itself, the internet, everything from webcomics to Kickstarter and all that, is allowing people to get their work seen more so than previously, where you were going to have to find some kind of a publisher to put your book out. And then you've got to work with distribution and you've got to work with everything else. The internet is its own distribution network. I mean, that's, I think, probably one of the key factors in everything.
As far as like technology and online, how do you guys feel about the change in digital comics themselves? You know, there's much more access to rural areas, you know, people that don't have a shop in the area. How do you guys feel about the whole explosion? Because it also increases journalist reviewer competition as well for self-publishers and such.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. I'm a paper guy. I still am, but it doesn't
they deliver
mean...
papers.
They still deliver the paper.
Yeah. Do they still make the paper?
Depends on where you're at, but no. The for me, I like the old fashioned. You know, I want the floppy copy. I want to go into my brick and mortar store and support that local business, because that is its own community in and of itself. When you walk in there, they're like, "Hey, did you read this? Did you read that?" And you can start talking to people and have fun. But for people like you're talking, Jay, where they're stuck outside of that realm, they don't have a local shop.
They have a local shop and it's poorly stocked. Kevin.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
And honestly, I kind of like the digital platform. I mean, most of what I still get are actual physical books, but I do like the digital platform because it opens me up to books I might not have ever picked up because I can... And just like in an actual shop, you know, I got to get my advanced pages, read a little bit more about it, get synopsis.
I've heard a lot of people, or some critics saying that, oh, well, digital comics will be the death of comics. And so far we've had it for several years, and I really haven't seen the death of comics. In fact, I think other factors are promoting comics, especially in the films and the movies.
Well, and all print the sales millions, of variants of copies of yeah. this and that.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
I just want to say, how would they be the death of comics if they are comics?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and I don't know if that picked up on the mic, but somebody in the audience says, I don't know how it could be the death of comics if they are comics.
Yeah. And it is a different, you know, medium. And I personally still like books, partly because I don't like reading things from a computer screen. But as those are getting more and more advanced and stuff, like the Kindle Nooks and stuff, it looks like you're reading it on paper. It doesn't have that like glare in your eyes anymore. So they're getting better, and they can do some fun stuff, such as if you pick up a new book and you don't know about the characters. Sometimes they've got those enhancements, like you can find out a bio about the character by just clicking on it and then keep reading. So I think that there's some really cool things that you can do with that digital medium that you might not be able to do in print.
Well, I used to be really anti-digital until I started realizing I don't have all this room for all the books that I buy. And having a little, you know, USB card or putting it on your Kindle or anything, a lot easier for storage. So
that's one of the big things. I mean, and actually, it's almost kind of the flip side of that coin, like Jay was talking about, people in rural areas, but people in big cities where, you know, they've got very limited space. I know that there's a lot of people that we know from New York that they've switched to digital, mm-hmm. and strictly because of space.
I know that some digital publishers, what was the one that went out of business and like a whole bunch of people had just signed up for subscriptions? And then the company went out of business. It was an anime company. And
Crunchyroll?
Maybe. But essentially, all those people who had bought those subscriptions no longer had access to the comics that they had purchased because they bought digital copies. But unless the publisher's website was up and running, you couldn't get access to them. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't want to send you like the PDF file, because then you could just place that on the internet and then people would illegally download it.
You're basically leasing.
Yeah, so instead of it's on the one hand, you do have to kind of protect from piracy and illegal downloads, but on the other hand, then what happens when that company goes away, if they were a smaller company,
then you might not have access to the book. So I think that's one downside of the digital copies. Whereas if I own the book, I own it until my house burns down or until my wife sells them in a garage sale when I'm not home.
Well, so. It's kind of the same thing like webcomics. I mean, now with the opportunity that people can put webcomics out because they don't have to pay to actually produce a physical book and have printing and distribution.
And there
so
are some,
a lot of comics we might have missed out on, now we're not going to because they can be online.
Well, and there are some absolutely fantastic webcomics out there. I mean, Ryan Lee and Chris Mewis with their book The Naturals that they release, you know, a page like, you know, every week or every other week on that. One of the most beautiful books you'll ever see in your life. And, you know, I mean, they printed some, but it was after that came out on a webcomic first.
Yeah.
And the Bunker was the same way. That was a book that that was originally released, originally released digitally. Mm-hmm. And then Oni Press saw the kind of work that it was, picked it up and said, we're publishing this. And I mean, even with a writer like Joshua Hale Fialkoff, who is amazing and does tons of work for tons of different publishers, even he was releasing something online because it was something that he wanted to do. He wanted to do it his own way.
Yeah, I remember especially being in college when I didn't have a job and therefore not a lot of money, that the internet was a really nice place to read some comics. I never got real big in like the file sharing and the torrents and the downloads, but there were some weekly comics that like I couldn't wait till they'd update on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm like, it's Friday, yeah, I got a new Order of the Stick to read, or Dr. McNinja, and they've been stories that I've honestly been reading one page at a time or one or two pages a week for the last 10 years. In some cases. So I'm glad that those people, those artists are getting their creative outlet and there's an opportunity for them to share it because of the internet.
Very cool. Okay, a little bit back to the podcasting arena. I know lots of people who have podcasts and some people do it for so many varied reasons, right? There's some people who just want to talk with their friends, or some people who, you know, like to get their voice and opinions out there, and some people use it for actually a tool to build their self-confidence and stuff, and, you know, help learn to public speak and such. So how about we get from each of you guys what doing this podcast has given you personally, whether it's just fun with your friends, or has it helped you in any kind of areas in your life, and like maybe in your work, anything like that?
Oh, it's paid for my yacht and second house in Miami, so...
Unfortunately, they're all the Barbie style.
Yeah, it's definitely not a big money maker, but what it is, it's a friendship maker. It's through the many...
Aww.
Yeah. Besides just being able to hang out with my friends and call it work, or the people that we've met at the conventions, like, we've seriously made some friends with some pretty big names in the industry who have enjoyed us for just being us. And
well, and we probably never would have had a chance to talk to them on that level had it not been for this.
Yep. So that's what I take out of it, I guess.
It's funny because when we started this, beyond the fact that it was just a why don't we record this, we're sitting there going, yeah, maybe we can get into conventions for free and, you know, be press, and who knows, maybe we'll get a couple free comic books. And it kind of turned into the whole thing from there, beyond just hanging out with these guys and having fun and having an actual, you know, excuse, I guess, if you will, to get together every week and drink a beer with these cats and talk comics. It's been nice because, like you were asking, Jay, it's a way for us to get our voice out there, to say, this is what we like, this is what we support with our own money, we think everyone else should look at it too. And I think that's kind of the big thing for me. Kevin?
Oh, I gotta go now. For me, of course, I say that already spitting out a whole crap load of ums and does, and honestly, that's the biggest thing that's come for me out of this podcast is listening to myself afterwards about how ridiculous I sounded the first handful of times. And I have a mind that races a million miles a minute. And I always have words that are quick to want to be expelled from my mouth.
Verbal diarrhea.
Yeah, but unfortunately when that happens, it usually comes out with ums and does. Mainly does. So So that's what the biggest thing is that I've taken, and which is very helpful because I do actually a lot of training nationally with my primary job. Unfortunately, this is none of our primary jobs.
Not yet.
Well, is this where we start promoting our advertisers? Yeah. So that, for me, that's the biggest thing that the show has taught me. It was learning how to not screw up as much in my words.
Learn how to talk gooder.
Yeah. As I head nod to you.
Yes.
Affirmative.
I think it's the fun for me. Because
not hanging out with me.
What's that?
Not hanging out with me.
No, you already said that though. So you can't like say the same. I can't just say the same answer that Tony gave.
But you could say hanging out with my big brother is the best part of this.
Hanging out with my big brother is the best part.
Internet, you heard that here.
Yes. No, I think that I just echo their thoughts that
isn't that like saying the same?
Yeah. Way to be unoriginal.
I tried to use different vocabulary words.
Way to go, Patrick Swayze. You just say ditto.
Get ditto. It done with. Ditto. No, so I have a lot of fun doing this, and I kind of want to highlight what Kevin's talking about with the public speaking aspect, because I teach public speaking. And so sometimes I teach it at the college level, and so sometimes I'm like, the college students can listen to our podcast. We do swear occasionally. We do talk about alcohol. So they're a little bit of an older audience. But I'm transitioning where my full-time job will hopefully be teaching in high school. And so part of me worries about, are potential employers going to listen to our podcast? If they do, that's one more person listening to our podcast, so that's good. But on the other hand, what kind of message am I putting out there? And I think...
But if they don't talk about it, or if they don't like it, they're going to be like, oh my God, you need to listen to this before we hire that guy.
Yeah.
That's going to be at least two.
There's two.
Two new listeners.
But I think for me, what I hope to be gaining is a better critical eye, because I am very positive. And I tend to like things, and I tend to always find the best in it. But I kind of want to, and I've kind of been working on how do I minimize the amount of words that I'll talk about instead of just saying, "Yeah, that was a good book." Like I want to use descriptions and artistic.
Thingies
in words that are pretty. But I want to try to get a message out there that is clear and succinct, and I think that's one of the things that this gives me an opportunity to do is work more on my critical skills.
Sorry. You want to be a wordsmither?
I want to be a yes.
There was a wordsmith comic I found today.
Oh snap!
Has anyone heard the word wordsmith? Anyone?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good enough of a yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people nodding their heads. Wordsmiths are totally acceptable.
This is one of our long-running inside jokes where Kevin was trying to say carpenter and he said woodsmith. And so, yeah.
Cool. Favorite moments from the show so far? These guys, you just put out your 100th episode. I believe you're at 101.
Yeah, 102 will be recorded tomorrow.
Specials on top and such.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, and actually you were asking the other day, and Tony, I want your opinion. With all the special editions, you got any idea what actual number we're on?
102.
Well, no, like how many actual podcasts have we published?
I'm guessing at least 130.
Yeah, I was guessing 130 to 150, somewhere in that range. Okay. Yeah,
that's a lot of recordings.
About a two-year period. Yeah. So.
Plus interviews.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking, special editions, interviews, regular.
That's it?
I'm guessing maybe 150.
You can go back and count.
Yeah.
No one's stopping you.
So my favorite moment was
what I was talking about audience, earlier. We can just have a huge number.
What I was talking about earlier was when Tony... A book came out called Space Punisher a couple years ago, written by Frank Tierra. And Tony was like, Space Punisher sounds really stupid. That book just sounds stupid because why is the Punisher in space?
And I loved it. I was reviewing it. And I'm like, well, just listen and let me explain why.
Yeah, listen to the review, Tony.
And so Frank Tierra calls Tony out and is like, maybe you should read the book.
Frank's tweet back to us was something along the lines of, to the guy who read the book, thank you. Glad you liked it. To the guy who didn't, read the book.
So Tony read it, and to his credit, he is a gentleman and is willing to admit when he made a mistake. So he made an apology and said, actually, when I did read it, when I understood what was going on, it's actually a really fun story. So
and Frank responded.
Frank responded well in the fact that he just said, you know, it's good to hear people taking responsibility, not just passing the buck. And that was kind of a nice moment for me to realize we are doing something good by keeping true to ourselves.
Well, so. Not only that, but it teaches the old saying, you know, don't judge a book by its cover and don't judge it by its title either. And especially in the comic book world, there could be so many books that you overlook because you're like, oh, it's made by this publisher, or, oh, it has this person in it. But really, at least look at a couple of pages and see what it's about, and you might be surprised on some of the things. Even if it's someone that's not a big name, there are some great books that I've read from just people that are pushing their books at cons. Really, that's one of the biggest things I could say to anyone that's going to convention. Pick up a book from a no-name person. Not only are you helping out the industry and helping out those people, but you may be surprised and may want to start supporting them in other ways as well.
And then you can do that on Kickstarter.
Yes.
Yeah. I think couple of my favorite moments, it's all similar things. Being drawn onto the variant cover for the Motor City Fanboys vs. Zombie issues last year. Going into the comic shop and picking up a trade paperback of a comic that I'd really enjoyed and flipping it over to see how much it was and seeing a quote from us from our podcast on the back of the book was shocking. I maybe peed a little. and then being drawn in to books when you don't know you're going to be drawn in and you open the book and you flip the page and you see, oh, there's the four of us.
It's the likeness of me.
Yeah, that was...
to say the least, Tony and my mother was very proud of us. To have made the cover of a comic book.
Yeah. Time magazine next?
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe a Pulitzer.
Kevin, you got a favorite?
Really, yeah. It's actually just the opportunity, the privilege of being invited here.
Yeah.
I mean, we have so many good episodes.
After your bachelor party, he was in pain.
Yeah, yeah, we've had some interesting day after podcasts, but really, my favorite, I think the pinnacle has just been invited here, and seeing people who've listened to our show, and that's real special.
Yeah. Tony, did you get your one?
My one?
Your one? There
I
can be really, only one, Tony.
I know. I'm going to say it's hanging out with my little brother
on
the weekends that he shows up.
You know, it was cute. Now it's getting disgusting.
Now that's on the internet, too.
Well, we've stayed positive quite a bit, but I want to say there's one thing when it comes to the internet that annoys me a bit. And
there's just one thing.
Just one thing. No, and it's spoilers.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
And
wait. I kind of want to take a poll.
I was going to ask them, but fine. Fuck you.
No, never mind. Well, oh, yeah.
Hey, you're allowed one while it remains PG-13.
Yeah. Oh, you stole it. God, why do you have to
question
be Hugh Jackman?
Question for our audience.
Can I give my favorite? I loved that episode.
Wait, when did we include you?
Saying, I love that episode. You guys did that cross pod with an elegant weapon. Yeah. Beautiful stuff. Gorgeous stuff.
Shameless self.
Of you guys out here, like, would you rather see kind of preview spoiler type stuff pop up in the news or not when it comes to your comics? Who's in favor?
All in favor of not, raise your hand.
Okay.
I'm in favor of coming out after the weekend following the comic book.
Okay. So. Or can't get to the comic book store on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. We try and stick to the, you know, no spoilers for at least 24 hours rule. You know, and even then we're pretty.
Yeah, our podcast we usually record on the weekend, typically like on a Sunday, and it usually gets up on the internet that night. And so we figured most people have read by then. We usually make the spoiler announcement that, hey, we're going to talk about these books, and there's no good way to talk about a book if you can't spoil it. Although sometimes we can get away with that. But, yeah, spoilers are bane of my existence right now.
Well, the nice thing with our podcast is people know. And we also put what books we're talking about. So if they haven't read it, they can go, okay, I'm going to read it first, and then I can play it. That's the great thing about a podcast. You can listen to it whenever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when places like big newspapers like New York Times has Professor X dies.
Well, Marvel in particular is probably the biggest on releasing the news releases to places like USA Today, and they'll publish it. It'll be on the internet Tuesday night because it's not going to hit newsstands till, you know, Wednesday. But it's like, okay, well...
Yeah, finding that out. And they even took the picture from the comic of Xavier dying. Sorry, spoiler alert in AVX. But, well, and also I was thinking about it too. they're already advertising that Wolverine's going to die. In like 3 months, they're already, this is going to happen. And
did you hear the new advertisement? They already said he's coming back from the dead in a couple years. So
I remember, we all know that's going to happen. When in the Batman series, when his son Damian was killed off, that was one that got spoiled, you know, real big. And I was like, you know what would have been really cool? Because it was like in an issue 4. It wasn't on this big climactic ending of a story arc. It was in the middle of the story arc that happened. Is if they could have just pushed that through, and all of a sudden readers would go, wait a second, did he just die? Did I pick up a book where a character got killed in it, and I didn't even know that? And then they can do a second printing when everyone's like, yeah, I want to get it, but then...
Yeah, and for true collectors that are collecting the series because either they like the series, they like the character, they like the creative team, whatever it may be, do your normal print run.
Yeah, now you have a collector's item that you've created for your loyal fans, but all the people who want to read the story can get in there on a second run or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. The spoilers are out there, and I kind of just want to have the internet, like, everything says spoiler, so you can say, I don't want to read that article.
Okay, we got a few minutes left. If you guys don't mind, we open up to the floor. Got any questions, curiosities, got anything to do?
Curiosities.
If not, we're just going to have to keep talking or stare at you uncomfortably.
And we can answer anything.
Yeah,
it may not be true or not, but we can answer anything. Simple math questions.
Okay.
Like, if you could go back in time, what comics creator or person who's no longer with us would you love to interview?
Kirby.
Hands down.
I think if I could go back in time, the first thing I'd do is kill Hitler. Because that's always the first thing you do if you go back in time. Yeah, you gotta punch him first. You know what? I actually think I would... Kirby is a very big choice, but I think Bob Kane would have been really good to talk to. So,
yeah, I can't go anyplace but Kirby. But yeah. I'm a Marvel guy. I've always grown up a Marvel guy more so than DC.
I guess the reason I'd want to talk to Bob Kane is I'd almost want to tell him this is what your character is going to be like in the future. Did you know when you created Batman that he was going to be such a like? Integral part of that DC world, a person who technically doesn't have powers, although when he was first created his power was Gizmo and that he could produce any gizmo that he needed to save the day, but then that character has evolved so much, and obviously if I was time traveling I'd disrupt the time space continuum by telling him where Batman's gonna go, but
how would you break it to him about like Batman and Robin though, the movie? And would you sit him down, have a nice drink, or would you just,
I think I might, out of courtesy, out of mercy, not bring that movie up.
Wouldn't have mattered what you told Bob Kane, because Bill Finger would have still done what he was going to do anyway.
I'd have gone back and slapped the guy who broke up a Marvel movie all under one roof. Because now you got, Fox having X-Men, you got Sony having Spider-Man.
Marvel Studios.
All those other ones where, why did they do that?
That's a good answer. I copy your answer.
Ditto.
Do you have any other...
Kevin, are you on the Kirby train? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And besides that, actually, I'm not as hip to a lot of the creators' names. Because essentially, I'm just recently in the last couple of years have come back into the folds of comics. So honestly, I don't remember. Even though I read a lot of 60s and 70s comic books, other than Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, I can't recall a lot of these people's names.
I'm bad. Did you have a question? Or?
Out of all the of main two, the alternate universe kind of one-shot things, what would you consider your favorite or best of those?
Ooh.
I know Tony.
Age of Apocalypse. That was the series that got me collecting. Mm-hmm. I always watched the original X-Men TV show, which so I knew comic books, but I didn't read comic books then, and it was something completely different. And not only was it completely different, Marvel went their whole studios pretty much, or publishing, like, this is what we're going to be doing.
For their X-Men line, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big event that they had, and it stuck, and they even went back to it quite a few times, and that for me is the coolest alternate world.
I think I ditto his because it was the same time. Like, so he was older than me, so he had more.
Do
money
we even
so
need you on
comics,
this show, Matt?
And so I could read his comics. And by the way, if you have friends that read comics, each of you can buy different comics and increase the number of titles you can read. But I think mine was Planet X. I don't know if you've ever read Earth X, and then. Yeah, Earth X and then
Paradise X.
Universe X and Paradise. I haven't gotten to Paradise X yet. But what it was is they took the whole Marvel Universe and they made everything working together so that it made sense what the Celestials were, what the Asgardians were, what the Skrulls were, why there were so many heroes on Earth. And it kind of made sense of all of it into one, as if one person had come up with the entire story. Because when you have multiple creators, you know, this person works over here on this title, which doesn't necessarily tie in here, and then they sometimes come up with silly tie-ins. But definitely Earth X was a really great series tying the whole Marvel Universe together.
Are we sticking with Marvel?
No, the big two, she said.
Oh, then if the Death of Superman, that whole thing that, I mean, that got me into collecting for...
But she also said universes. I guess it is an alternate universe now because
he's back.
Because no, because the new 52 reboot. Now that was a different universe.
I was expecting him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was expecting a what if out of you.
Oh no! I always think what if comic books is one offs.
Yeah, one offs.
Did you? What's your favorite what if?
I don't remember exactly what it's called, but definitely what if Juggernaut was the last man on Earth.
Ooh.
Okay.
Which was 94.
Yeah.
That was an emotional episode.
Okay, sorry, guys.
I don't get to answer?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Come on.
Go on. I just want to say, before you answer, we just got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
To wrap this up.
Yeah.
So.
If I was going to go DC, it would probably have to be Frank Miller's Dark Knight. I mean, there's no way around that one. In Marvel, the 1984 series that came out, which thanks to Tony, he actually got me to read that, and I somehow totally missed that one. But most recently, Marvel would be Daredevil: End of Days. It was one of the most beautiful stories I've ever seen, drawn, written the whole way around. I mean, that creative team is insane. So.
Yeah, you've talked about that on the show a lot, actually.
I still talk about it a lot. Yeah. I won't shut up about it. It's that
it's
good.
Sure, you won't shut up about it.
Ditto.
So, basically, that's the deal. As often you can find with most podcasts, a lot of them are usually, if you're taking it any bit seriously, available on iTunes, which these guys are, as well as drunkoncomics.com. You can go there for more than just the podcast. They've got news. They've got reviews. Lots of fun stuff. I would maybe encourage you, if you're interested in podcasting before you leave, to maybe actually come up and just have a look at, because as you see here, this is being recorded as well, so you'll be able to hear this when these guys post it later. But you can see a little bit of all the equipment and everything that gets used for a very simple podcast. It's a very easy thing to start. So unless you guys got a last few words or any kind of shout-outs or anything you want to mention.
We could also find us on Stitcher. Mm-hmm. If you're on the Android platform, that's a great way to
Actually, I'm going to take one last poll here, because out of those of you that listen to podcasts, who prefers iTunes? Anybody? Anybody prefer Stitcher?
What do you guys prefer then? Since
just streaming directly from the down.
Podbay.
What is it?
Podbay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there.
Oh, fantastic! All right, see, we're learning stuff. All right, well,
thank you,
my
guys.
Last words, yeah, thank you for everybody that came out and everybody that supports us and all that, and yeah, that's it for me.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys. Yep.